Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls, questions, perhaps your stories with Mitch Horowitz as we roll right back as we talk about the occult on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Mitch Horowitz with us. Mitch, tell us a little bit more about Hillary Clinton and her beliefs, and will that haunt her if she gets the nomination?
This is something to watch for in the news. During Bill Clinton's first term, stories began to run in the Washington Post that Hillary was conducting seances in the White House. Now, what was really going on was this. Hillary has a taste for New Age spirituality, and I say that with respect. I apply the term New Age to myself. And so she was meeting with different spiritual gurus in the White House, one of whom was a spiritual teacher named Jean Houston, who's a friend of mine and who's a wonderful woman, wonderful intellect, and she and Hillary were engaging in these creativity exercises where Hillary, in essence, was pretending to speak to the spirit of Eleanor Roosevelt and to gain guidance and wisdom and priorities from Eleanor Roosevelt. It was more of a creativity exercise than anything like a seance, but Bob Woodward of the Washington Post began to write these pieces, and I don't think Jean was able to get her point across as to what the difference was between some kind of a self-discovery session and something that to the mainstream folks sounded like a seance. So these articles started to make the rounds, and Hillary very quickly cut off her ties with all of her various New Age advisors, who also included a very liberal, mystically minded rabbi named Michael Lerner. And eventually the story wound down and went away, but given the way things are going, it may come back. You may start hearing about Hillary Clinton seances again.
You know, Mitch, the White House, since its inception, has had these incredible stories. Even George Washington had his moments, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, Washington was a fascinating character. He spent most of his life as a committed member of Freemasonry. He was very dedicated to Masonry. You can find replicas of his Masonic apron with the skull and bones, the square and cross, the obelisk, and other occult Masonic emblems. And interestingly enough, some of our founders, including Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, John Hancock, gave the job to the Continental Congress of coming up with the Great Seal of the United States, which is the mysterious iron pyramid on the back of our dollar bill. That was a symbol that wasn't recognized by many Americans until the 1930s, when Franklin Roosevelt, a Freemason, and his second vice president, Henry Wallace, also a Freemason, decided to place it on the back of our dollar bill. That image is not directly from Masonry, but is inspired by Masonry. It conveys the idea that material prosperity is incomplete without the eye of providence, the floating eye, that the material is incomplete without the spiritual. It's an ethic from Masonry, and we carry it around in our pocket every day on the back of our dollar bill.
And even Abraham Lincoln had prophetic dreams of his own death. He had a dream as he was walking up to the casket, standing by soldiers watching, and he said, "Who died?" And he looked in, it was him.
That's correct. And he also had another dream. It's hard to tell whether this was a dream or kind of a vision, but the way he described it was that when he won his first election, he kind of collapsed onto a sofa just to take a little rest before going out and giving a victory speech. And he got up, he looked in the mirror in his home, and he saw two images of himself, one very lifelike, the other deathly pale. He laid down again. He got up again. He saw the images again. He told his wife, Mary Todd, about this, and she said, "That is a prophecy of your death. You're going to be elected to a second term in office, but you will also die in office." And this is extraordinary, but this is part of the historical record. It's written about in one of Carl Sandburg's brilliant biographies of Lincoln.
All right, let's go to the phones now. Let's go to Rosemary in Ashland, Oregon to get us started. Hello, Rosemary.
Yes, one moment. Here's your calling. There you go. Hello?
Yeah.
This is Rosemary.
Uh-huh. I introduced you.
Oh, thank you, George. Well, I'm calling about two things. And
All right, back off your phone a little bit. Back off your phone.
Okay, is this better?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Is that a little better?
Yeah.
All right.
Go
thank
ahead.
You. Thank you. One of the things I was calling about, there was the question of who warned President Kennedy about going to Dallas. And I remember something when I was a teenager. I'm 68 now. But when I remember watching the late the Jack Parr show,
mm-hmm.
and they had a segment of the correlation between the names Kennedy and Lincoln.
Yes.
And there was mentioned, I hope I'm right, and if somebody please if check to see if of my accuracy, I believe it was Evelyn Lincoln who was President Kennedy's, one of his secretaries, who warned him not to go to Dallas.
Mm.
And it was, and in the case of President Lincoln, his, the person who warned him not to go to the theater that night had the last name of Kennedy.
And his vice president was Andrew Johnson.
Right.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, it just kept going. Now, we talked a little bit about who might have warned Kennedy. You want to talk about the Jean Dixon story again, Mitch?
Oh, sure. Well, Jean claimed that she warned Kennedy. She claimed that she tried to warn Bobby Kennedy and couldn't get through to him. It's difficult to get to the back of some of these things because they're written about after the deaths of some of these individuals. And Jean did have a tendency to embellish things in her memoirs. But nonetheless, credit has to go to her. Parade magazine wrote an article about her in 1956 when she was a young woman. And in the second to last paragraph, there she is saying, a young man with brown hair, athletic, with the support of the labor movement, a Democrat, will win the nomination and die or be assassinated in office. So you have to tip your hat to that.
Indeed. And there were some very strange juxtapositions between Kennedy and Lincoln. I mean, things were, you know, again, they had vice presidents named Johnson.
Yeah. There were a lot of strange numerological correspondences as well, you know, the number value of the names of their assassins and so forth. There were like a lot of strange congruities there, that's right.
West of the Rockies, Steve is in Washington, state of. Go ahead, Steve, thanks for calling.
Oh, hi, Mitch and George, how are you?
Good, hey, thank you.
Hey, I just, I remember when I was in college in the early 80s, some of the Bible prophecies used to talk about the end of the world, the apocalypse, and they started talking about an interesting little theory that was kind of interesting. It had to do with Israel peaking or being existent for so many years. I think it was somewhere around 50 years, and then the numerical value of the beast being a 666.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that matched Ronald Wilson Reagan. And even though I didn't consider it very serious, it was interesting to talk about it. I just wondered if you had any input on that.
Well, yeah, that story certainly is out there. You know, people, I think, look, in our country, we have a crisis of accountability. People feel that, and they're correct, that people who run our financial and political institutions are not transparent enough, they're not accountable enough, and that will fuel a fascination with whether a figure like Reagan or an Obama is hiding something. In most cases, I would say that the occult interests of people in positions of power, to me, reaffirm their humanity. I look at it as saying, well, gee, powerful people, whether it be a Donald Trump, whether it be a Ronald Reagan or a Hillary Clinton, frankly, they had some of the same interests as many of the listeners to this show do. And it reassures me in a certain sense that I could have sat down and had a conversation about some of these things with Ronald Reagan, for example. His star sign was Aquarius, it so happens, and he loved to talk about that and hold forth on how Aquarius was the sign of statesmen and mystics and so forth. And I find it reassuring. I find it humanizing that many powerful people have actually had some of the same interests as listeners to this show.
Well, there's no question about that. And why do you think, Mitch, because, you know, you spend a lot of time talking about the unusual and the occult. Why is it growing? Because it is.
You know, that's a wonderful question, George, and I have to be straight up with you. Journalists will ask me that question all the time, and sometimes what I'll tell them is because it's valid, because it's true, because it contains kernels of truth. you know, when people ask me, like, gee, why is the Ouija board growing in popularity again? They're always looking for socioeconomic answers in times of war, in times of economic crisis. Well, if you talk to people of different generations, they always feel like they're living through crises. Every generation feels that it's somehow on the precipice. But the reason that these things have endured, the reason astrology, Western astrology, has endured, in my perspective, is because it contains core truths. That's why. It's the last place that most academics or journalists want to look, but it has to be said. People aren't into these things because they're naive or because they're foolish. Astrology hasn't survived since ancient Babylon because we're all a bunch of navel gazers. It survived because it does contain a kernel of truth about the human situation.
We go next to Scott in Jackson, Michigan, east of the Rockies. Hi, Scott. Go ahead.
Hey, George.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to fit this in as quick as I can. This is for you and for your guest.
Okay, there. Scott.
There was a story about George Bush's grandma on Barbara's side. Is that she was in Aleister Crowley's occult, and actually they went and got her out of there. Okay, well, I watched a show right after 9/11 that George Bush was on. It was a fundraiser for firefighters after 9/11, and Ozzy was sitting there laughing, drinking, and George Bush got up and he grabbed a microphone and he says, I see we got a lot of celebrities there. And he's like, well, right over here we got Ozzy. He says, hey, Ozzy, he goes, I just want to tell you, Mom loves your music and your work. Keep up the good work. And Ozzy turned ghost white, like he's seen a ghost, and looked like he was going to throw up and almost dropped his drink. I'm just curious if you guys have heard anything about the connection between George Bush and Crowley.
Well, I've never, first of all, I do remember that story where Bush said, you know, Ozzy, Mom loves your stuff. And I presumed he was joking around, but I've never been able to verify that connection or that story. But I will tell you one about the Bush family background and the occult that I have verified. And I'll tell you, this is dead to right facts. One of the earliest ancestors of the Bush family here in America was a Reverend George Bush, who lived and was very active in the mid-19th century. He was a big, big defender of spirit mediums and channelers and psychics and people who sat for seances. And he was a very sensational figure in the mid-19th century because he had been at one time a very conservative Bible scholar at New York University. And he grew more mystical as he got older, and he became a real advocate for spiritualists, or people who talk to the dead. He was the first cousin, four times removed, from the Bush presidential clan. And if you look at a picture of this Reverend George W. Bush, he's a bearded man, but if you look at him when he was a young man, he was the spitting image of George W. Bush, the president. It's uncanny. They look so much alike.
Wow.
But the Bush ancestor that you don't hear talked about much was a genuine man of occult and metaphysical interest. He's forgotten today. He was quite famous in the mid-19th century. I live on the east side of Manhattan. He occupied the pulpit of a mystical church two blocks away from me on East 35th Street. He occupied the pulpit for 1 year, the year of his death, in 1859. The place is still standing. It's a Swedenborgian church. And he used the pulpit there to defend various occult practitioners. And that's the real backstory of the Bush family in this country.
Mitch, did you ever hear about the curse of the Kennedys?
Oh, yeah, sure. People talk about it all the time. There's this idea that death hovers over the Kennedys. Now, I had the opportunity several years ago to meet John Kennedy Jr., who I had a conversation with, and he was a lovely guy, not at all a snob, not hard to talk to, very friendly, very nice, and it was several months before he and his wife died tragically.
Then 1999, crash. I think, right?
That's right. Yeah. Now, he told a story that blew me away, and I'm glad you've reminded me of this. When he was a teenager, he was running into some problems, and he was getting kind of wild on the party scene, and his mother, Jackie Onassis, decided to send him to a kind of dude ranch in the middle of Wyoming. It was a place for troubled kids, I guess. And so he spent a summer on this ranch, and he told a story that ranchers in the area had been complaining about cattle mutilations. There were these mysterious cattle mutilations going on. And he and a group of friends, he said, were horseback riding one day, and they came into a meadow, and they found a cow that was completely dead. The body had been deceased for several hours. It had two pinprick holes in its neck, and all of the blood had been drained out of its body. And this was something that had been going on in this area of central Wyoming in the 1970s. And he said it was really frightening, really creepy. No one was ever able to solve the tale. And again, I thought it was a kind of tribute to him that he was willing to tell a creepy story like that and do so in a very straightforward way. He was a good guy, and it's very tragic that he died as he did.
Oh, sure did. And it was pilot's error, they say, but you know what? Yeah. You never know. You never
very
know.
Very tragic death.
Let's go to Wayne in Tacoma, Washington. Hi, Wayne. Thanks for calling, sir. Go ahead.
Hi, George. You know, as you've said many times, there are no coincidences.
No, sir.
It's amazing how much you've talked about the Reagans and their realm and delve into mysticism and the occult while they were in the White House. And then again, that reminds me of what came up on Hillary Clinton the other night with the book and everything that you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to get the real story behind it, talk to Hal Lindsey, because he talks about it in his series on the Book of Daniel. And it's the archons. The archons are behind all of these leaders, and archons are
not too friendly.
Archangels that were cast down.
The evil ones.
Exactly.
Yeah, we've talked to Jay about that, Weidman, and lots of strange things going on these days, Mitch.
Yeah. These are strange times. Every generation feels like they live in strange times, but it's hard to feel that there isn't some kind of a weird shift going on. I can't imagine a year from now our political culture is going to look the same as it does today.
No, it's changing already, isn't it?
You can see it. You can see it. Trump is shaking apart the foundations of the Republican Party.
And they're trying to shake him.
They're trying to shake him. They've got about a week to go, as you were discussing with one of your correspondents. And it's strange. You know, when I was a kid, politics was this very gray, predictable affair. And today, there's a feeling that almost anything can happen. It's a time of a lot of weird energy. It's a time of real creativity, too, but it can go in a dark direction or it can go in a light direction. But there's a lot of energy being unleashed right now.
We're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM with final phone calls with Mitch Horowitz as we talk about the presidents and the occult. And then next hour, we'll begin 2 hours of Friday night into Saturday morning open lines for you here on Coast to Coast AM. And Mitch's websites, just to look at his works, are all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast with Mitch Horowitz. Mitch, unbelievable. Last June, we started ParanormalDate.com, and we did go over 39,000 members, heading for 40,000. Now we're about 877 short. But people want to meet people who are into these topics.
Yes.
And you can't find that everywhere.
Yes. It's wonderful. You've got a whole community going. Absolutely wonderful.
And it's growing. It really is. And they're enjoying themselves. They're having fun, and you know, they don't have to argue with each other.
That's right. And when you're into esoteric topics, you want to be seen. You want to be heard. You want to hang around people who affirm what you're interested in.
That's right. How did you get interested in this?
It started when I was a kid. You know, I grew up in Queens in the 1970s. And every time you turned on the television, there was an astrologer or a robed guru. I was fascinated with Ouija boards and Bigfoot.
Uh-oh.
I would take out these books of folklore from the public library, and I would try some of these little fortune-telling games. And sometimes they would work in quite an extraordinary and eerie way. And I would ask myself, where did all this stuff come from? And I wanted to kind of get to the truth of it all. So I've continued that well into adulthood.
Let's go to Iowa, east of the Rockies. Lulu's with us. Hello, Lulu. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Lulu. How about you?
Well, not too bad. I have a Ouija board story.
Oh, you do? Oh, okay. Coincidence? Nah.
You know how when the girls get together and you need something exciting to do and you get out the Ouija board.
Yeah.
And the first question, of course, is, am I going to get married? Right?
And now, this is, how old are they when they're doing this? Any age?
Mid-20s.
Mid-20s, okay.
And it came to my turn, and I said, am I going to get married? And it just shot to yes. And I said, who? And the planchette just started to circle and circle and circle, and then it spelled out M-E, and I never touched it again.
Huh. And did you get married to an M-E?
No, I didn't get married at all.
Oh, me.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
I thought you ended up marrying a Michael Edwards or something like that.
That just scared the living daylights out of me. And I said, I don't think I'm going to do Ouija boards anymore.
How about that? Did you try to get married?
I was engaged 5 times.
5 times?
Oh.
Did they get you a ring 5 times?
Yes.
Did you keep them?
No.
You gave them all back?
Yes.
That's honorable.
Thank you.
Who broke off the engagements, the 5 of them? You broke all 5 off?
You know that movie, Runaway Bride?
Yep.
Well, I would dream that the minister was saying, do you take this man? And I would say no and leave. And then I could not marry that person.
What was the shortest engagement?
Probably 6 months.
What was the longest?
The longest? Oh, gosh, a year.
That's not that long.
Well, I don't know.
Cumulatively, though.
No, any regrets with any of them?
Well, let me put it this way. I didn't know that the last person that asked would be the last person to ask.
Yeah, that's true. You thought one more was coming, didn't you?
Always.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, thanks, Lulu. Appreciate it. That's kind of neat. Got to watch those Ouija boards, Mitch.
Oh, yeah. Here's a funny Ouija board marriage story. This is in my book, Occult America. 3 young women years ago were sitting down and asking a Ouija board, just like Lulu, will we get married? And the board spelled out, yes, there will be 3 marriages and 3 divorces. And they were all sort of a bit depressed about that. Years later, as it happened, 2 of the women never married. 1 woman was married and divorced 3 times. Came true.
It did. I love those stories.
Yeah, everyone's got one.
Eric in Indiana. Hello, Eric. It's your turn. Go ahead.
Eric, George, this is the mind control guy. How you doing?
I'm good, Eric. Thank you.
Excellent. Some time ago, I was reading one of my Men in Black books, and I read a story in there about Thomas Jefferson had encountered a cloaked dark figure, that the legend has it gave him direction or inspiration in writing the Declaration of Independence.
Yep.
As the story goes, he saw this cloaked figure 1 time and never saw it again. And I was wondering if the guest knows about that story.
I do. Thank you for bringing that up. I think that story got twisted around a little bit. It actually came from a writer named George Lippard, who was a friend of Edgar Allan Poe and was a guy who was into the esoteric and the occult, lived in the mid-19th century. He wrote a story that there was this mysterious figure who showed up at the signing of the Declaration of Independence, and when the delegates to the original convention in Philadelphia were wavering, when they were too afraid to put their signatures to the document, this mysterious man, who no one knew, no one had seen him enter or leave the premises, gave this rousing speech and encouraged them to be brave and fix their names to the documents. And he sort of sealed the deal, as it were. And then he vanished. No one knew who he was. This story changed many, many times over the years. It got retold, reprocessed. It made it into books that were written by Manly P. Hall, the occult scholar we were talking about earlier, and I tell you that very same story got repeated from the 1950s to the 1980s by President Ronald Reagan, who took it very seriously. And in 1981, Reagan wrote a little essay for Parade magazine. He hand-wrote it in his on a yellow legal pad, talking about what the 4th of July meant to him, and he talked about that story. So, you know, it's changed over the years. Sometimes it's Jefferson, sometimes it's somebody else, but that is a story that sort of belongs to American lore, and it was a big influence on Ronald Reagan.
How would you have loved to have lived during that era, just to meet those folks and talk with them a little bit?
They were just of a whole different caliber. You know, I mean, these guys were not only soldiers and statesmen, but they were inventors, they were writers, they were multilingual. I mean, they were supermen in a certain sense. You know, they were great figures.
Let's go to West Palm Beach, Florida now. It's Mike's turn on Coast to Coast. Mike, take it away.
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, hello. Hello, yeah. Concerning astrology and the Kennedy assassination, I've done a lot of research in the area. Most writers will not touch the area, of course. Your assassination writers are afraid of the whole talk about it. Jane Dixon, in June of 1963, predicted that Kennedy would be killed that year. This was on the Long John Neville show. I heard it. Years later, Neville kept repeating it on the tape and everything. He had to threaten her. And that show, when they had a commercial, to shut her mouth and not talk like that.
Wow.
That's a fact.
That's
all the astrology magazines at that time predicted that November 22nd, 1963, was going to be a very bad day for President Kennedy.
Hmm.
You know, they do this with the stars and politicians all the time. They all agreed on that. That was a very bad day for him. Too bad he didn't read astrology magazines. Anyway, next step. I did more research. And I found out that astrology played a big role in the assassination. And let me explain how it was done. You might have heard about this story. There was a book that came out called The Tears of Autumn by Charles McCarthy in the 70s, who was a former agent of the CIA who writes a novel about the Kennedy assassination. So you know right away it has to be truth if it's a novel. And what he does is, this is the way he explains what happened. Truth, what really happened. 3 weeks before Kennedy died, he ordered the coup in South Vietnam against Diem and his brother. They were both killed. The family in Vietnam were very angry, and what they did was they wanted revenge. So they went to an astrologer in Saigon, and in Asia, this is what they do with astrology. They don't do that here. They went to the astrologer, gave him Kennedy's name, birth date, longitude, latitude, and so forth. The astrologer worked up a chart picking November 22nd as the day to kill him at the time. Longitude, latitude. It was all worked out. And that's what really happened. The astrologer actually planned this whole thing. Of course, I don't agree with the whole book because the rest of it, he says Castro played a role. I don't believe Castro played a role in it and some of his people. I think he said that to avoid any trouble with his masters, the CIA people. But astrology is a very sinister thing in Asia. In Asia, they want to murder you. They will go to an astrologer and give you, you know, your name and your birth date and all this stuff, and they will put a chart out for you. They might do it here, too, secretly. And I suspect they do it here secretly. By the way, that's a new topic for your book. A new book? Go to 100 astrologers here in America. Give them the birthday. Let's say Trump wins the presidency. Don't give Trump's name. Give his birthday, longitude, latitude, when he was born, and say, when can I kill this person? And let's see what the astrologers do for you. They charge, and would they actually write a chart up to kill Donald Trump, President Donald Trump? It'd be a very interesting topic to work on and see if American astrologers are that greedy where they would do something like that.
Well, let's hope not. Subject matter I normally don't talk about, Mitch.
Right, right.
Too many sickles out there.
Yeah. Amen.
You remember when... I don't know how old you were. You're probably not even born. When Diem was assassinated in Vietnam?
Yes. And, it's interesting. The caller was saying something about astrology in Vietnam. Western astrology, at least prior to the communist takeover, was very popular in Vietnam. So was the Ouija board. There were many mystical movements in Vietnam that they kind of inherited through France and through the United States. And that's having a resurgence in Vietnam. There's kind of a new age resurgence in Vietnam, but it was very strong before the communist takeover.
Well, and ironically, Diem was assassinated November 2nd, 1963, pretty darn close to John F. Kennedy's assassination.
Very close. Very close.
Too weird. Too weird. Let's go to Gary in Santa Maria, California. Hey, Gary, go ahead.
Oh, hi, boy. It's right on topic for where I was going. Mitch, the last time you were on the air was March 11th, last year exactly. It's my decision.
Well, actually, he was on with me a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, the time before that, yeah, I was on with him a few weeks ago, too.
All right.
I'm keeping consistent here.
So it's not the last time you were on.
Yeah, the last two times you were on, I was too. But on March 11th of 2015, there was an X2 flare, and then I was also on again on May 4th, and there was an X27 flare, and it has to do with remote influencing and emotion. George, when you interviewed Terry Schiavo's brother, that was 2003. There was a flurry of X flares. There was also a flurry of X flares about 3 or 4 days after Katrina hit.
God, you got a memory. Wow.
Yeah, thanks to Coast Insider. And I think I'm in the top 1% of listening to the... I'm tracking all of this stuff. It's my opinion that thought control is alive and well at the NSA, and I believe that they're using astrology for some of the same reason the previous caller said.
So you don't think it went away? It's still there, huh?
Well, I think Ed Dames may be the only one that's still involved.
He's coming on in a few weeks. Let's ask him.
I think they cut everybody else loose. I've tried to pin Ed down twice on the air, and he always manages to move sideways. Ingo Swann was an astrologer first and a remote viewer second. Everything I learned about crystals, I learned from your aunt in her book, Shefrika, Breakthrough to Creativity. And she was also versed in astrology. There aren't just 12 signs. There's 1,728 signs. You've got to take your rising sign, your moon sign, and your sun sign. That makes 1,728 possibilities. In your audience, when you do a mass intention to change the taste of water, or with Lynn McTaggart, or the ones that I've done, only each person is going to ping in exactly at somebody else's exact frequency, 1,728. Just one.
Well, it just takes one person, Gary. That's all it takes. Mitch, the clock's going to get us pretty soon, but are you aware of intention experiments?
Yes.
That Gary's talking about?
Absolutely fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. It ties into advances that we're seeing all across the field of tracking the powers and the influence of consciousness, whether it's quantum theory or placebo studies or psychical research. The power of intention is very real, and I think in our generation, right now, we're seeing a renaissance of this material. This is going to flower in the early 21st century, and I encourage listeners to experiment with this stuff themselves. Frankly, it's as easy as getting a hold of a book like The Power of Positive Thinking. You don't have to tell anybody you're doing it, and experiment a little. I mean, that's what this country is here for in a certain sense. We all have to find our own path to meaning, and I think the mind power path is something that we should all be working with.
Once you tap into it, you do amazing things.
Yeah. It's really extraordinary. My book, One Simple Idea, is coming out in paperback in May, and I've added some new practical material to it. At the end of each chapter, I've provided new techniques and methods that people can use to experiment with this stuff themselves. And my battle cry is go and experiment. You know, don't take anyone's word for it.
Let's go to David in Arizona. Hello, David. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to share some information on astrology. Third Reich, particularly with Rudolf Hess flying to Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually based on an actual astrological prediction by a gentleman named Carl Ernst Graf, who, when Hitler came to power, did his chart, and he made three predictions. tide of war would go against her. Then he made the prediction that war would end in 45. Now, all three of those came true, but Rudolf Hess actually was an astrologer. He wasn't a professional astrologer, but he was competent because he was born in Egypt and his parents were in the foreign service. His mom, totally into the occult, taught him astrology, so he worked with it. When Karl Kraft made that prediction, he replicated it. That's why he flew to Scotland in 41. Mm-hmm. Now, they say, oh, they don't know, or this. He was well aware of the astrological, implications and stuff of that, which is why he went there. And to show that Hitler, was aware of this,
Oh, he was huge into it. Hitler was into the occult and dabbled with it, Mitch, probably more than anyone.
Yes, and your caller is absolutely right on. Karl Ernst Kraft was an astrologer who worked for the Nazis and later died in a concentration camp, as did all the occultists who worked for the Nazis. They would use you for a period of time, but if you came up with predictions that they didn't like or fed into something like the Rudolf Hess affair, you would meet your end quickly. So there were different occult figures who passed into the Nazi world, found favor with them for a while, but were murdered just like everyone else.
Mitch, thank you again. Take care of yourself. Have a great weekend, and let's see what unfolds in the future, okay?
Thank you, George. A great pleasure.
Mitch Horowitz, always a great guest. When I come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM, it's that time. Open lines for a couple hours, Friday night into Saturday morning on Coast to Coast AM.